From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, filling in for Brian Mackey, who is out this week. Today, we're re-airing some of our most important conversations from this year so far. Later, we'll hear about the Illinois Caverns, which recently reopened to visitors after being closed for more than a decade. But first, gun violence is an issue that disproportionately affects African-American communities in Chicago. According to the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office, 78% of the 875 people who died from gun violence last year were Black. And a recent city health report found that the life expectancy of Black Chicagoans was 9 years less than others. Last month, Brian Mackey spoke with Lakedra Chavis, a reporter from The Trace in Chicago, about gun violence in the Black community. She's also the author of the recent series Aftershocks, which tells the stories of those surviving gun violence in Chicago. We wanted to revisit that conversation for you today. Here it is.
Lakedra, the first piece of this series, which as I mentioned is called Aftershocks, it's out today. It focuses on a community in South Chicago called Roseland. Can you paint a picture for us? What is Roseland like? How is it different from other parts of Chicago?
Yeah, so Roseland is a historic Black community on Chicago's South Side. When it first began almost 200 years ago, it was a small village of Dutch immigrants, but that slowly changed, especially during the Great Migration. So within about two generations, the community became a mostly Black community, and then a lot of industries ended up leaving, which created a sort of jobs crisis, which some people are still dealing with today. But it is surrounded by a lot of historic Black communities in that area on the south side of the city. So that is what Roseland is like today. And of course, it deals with a certain level of gun violence as well.
Yeah, well, and you before we get into the violence there, you spoke with a number of residents from the community. How did they describe where they live?
Yeah, so I did a really small survey asking people how would they describe Roseland in one word. And these are people who have grown up in Roseland. They've lived in the community all their life, or at least most of their life, and they. You know, it was really different depending on who I was talking to. And even sometimes when I was talking to people in the same block and, you know, sometimes they would describe it as a village or, you know, it was sort of acceptable, it was adequate. And sometimes it was a bit more grim. So they would describe it as horrific or dangerous. But more and more, I found people who, even that I didn't survey, it would just come up in regular interviews, who really felt like the word to describe Roseland was resilient.
Interesting. So you and your team looked at the data for Roseland. How many people have been victims of gun violence there?
Yeah, so since 2010, and this is using Chicago police data, so it does exclude shootings that happen on highways and police shootings as well, so just to preface. But according to that data, there have been more than 1,200 people that have been shot in Roseland. And of that amount of people, most of them survived. And, you know, just this year, there have been at least 60 people shot in the Roseland community alone.
Yeah, and you talk about that sort of pervasive sense of grief that comes from the survivors of that, as well as, I mean, much of the media, where there's often focus on the people who are killed by gun violence, but far more people survive.
Yeah, it is a much more common experience. And with this series, we also wanted to broaden the definition of survivors. So even people who may have not been shot and survived, right, people who have lost loved ones or even heard, you know, just gunshots on their block, we wanted to be inclusive of those experiences as well, because they do cause, you know, a certain amount of trauma for people. So that is, you know, what we try to focus on. And what I found when I was out reporting in Roseland is that, you know, gun violence, of course, really does have several ripple effects for people, whether it means that it's a parent that, you know, doesn't let their children sort of run out of eyesight. They sort of have to play just in the front yard and there's always someone watching them. Or it's, you know, someone, I talked to someone who has lived in Roseland for most of their life, and they had heard so many gunshots just from where they were in the community that they could begin to tell the difference between what type of gun someone was shooting down to the type of caliber of the weapon, because they had just heard it so much. And, you know, I think dealing with that type of trauma for years on end obviously does affect people. And, you know, it can really change how someone goes about their day to day, whether it's avoiding certain blocks or, you know, sort of changing up routes to go home, depending on their sort of perceived level of safety and how much that has been threatened.
And you point out that there's very rarely justice for these shootings in Roseland. 5%, I believe, resulted in arrest. Why is that number so low?
Yeah, so it's sort of similar to a trend in Chicago in general, where especially for non-fatal shootings, there is a much more lower likelihood that Chicago police will make an arrest in a case. What we found in Roseland as well was that about half of all of the cases in the past decade, shooting cases, that they were suspended within about a month of the incident taking place. And what that means is that a detective believes that there's sort of no sufficient evidence to continue the investigation, so it is put on hold. And again, that's a trend that we found, you know, the numbers are different, but that's a trend that we found around the city as well, just a high percentage of cases that were being suspended. And of course, this percentage only grew during the pandemic as well, just as gun violence was really, really beginning to rise.
Yeah, I'm reminded hearing about this of the book Ghetto Side by Jill Leovi. She wrote about Los Angeles and murder there, gun violence. But one of the main threads of that book was the idea that a lack of the right kind of policing, a lack of focus on investigations and solving crime and bringing people to justice, perpetuated the cycle of violence, because people felt the only way they could get justice was to carry a gun themselves, maybe. And you have these cycles of retaliation. Is that a factor in what you learned from speaking with people in Roseland?
Yeah, I think it's certainly a factor just around Chicago. Whenever I ask people about their perception of police and, you know, reporting crimes, you know, their experience with an investigation, there is this sense, at least from the people that I've spoken to, that they are not going to see that traditional form of justice where an arrest is made. And they would rather not focus on that because they know it is already a reality. And they do not sort of want to fixate on the idea that justice is going to happen, given everything that we've known about how often arrests are made in these cases for, you know, several years at this point. And I think in addition to this, it does create a sense that, you know, there's a bit of hopelessness, right? Because you have experienced this really horrible victimization, and yet there's not a conclusion in that way where someone is being held accountable for what happened to you.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. We're speaking with Lakedra Chavis. She's a reporter for The Trace, a nonprofit newsroom focusing on gun violence, and the author of the new series Aftershocks, which looks about surviving gun violence in Chicago. Lakedra, what do people say about police in the neighborhood? Do they want police more involved, less involved?
Yeah, so Roseland is a big community. Most community areas in Chicago are. So the opinions on gun violence, on policing, on really just about any issue really varies. So there are some people who say they want more police in the neighborhood, but they want police officers that are going to help and have sort of an active role, community-based role in their job. And then there are people who, you know, given their prior interactions with police and what they've seen firsthand, they really do not want that as an option. But I think a lot of people would generally agree that what they want is actual investment from city leaders in the community, and they want to feel like their voices are heard. So this is not an issue that is that's begins and ends with policing. It's much more complicated than that. And I think the resources that people want, more childcare, more affordable housing, you know, go into that as well. It's not just about police.
Yeah, one of the people you spoke with in the first story, which is out today, said, you know, talked about some of the things that are missing, right? There's not a grocery store, a sit-down restaurant, no cleaners. People have to go outside the community for those services. And yet, a Whole Foods opened nearby. How are people reacting to that?
Yeah, so there was a Whole Foods that opened in a nearby neighborhood a few years ago, and there was a Walmart that's opened up in the past decade. There's a Culver's, burger chain that is coming, but none of that is coming to Roseland. It's coming to nearby neighborhoods. And the person that I spoke to that said what you just paraphrased. He has had a shop in the Roseland Business District for several decades now. It's family owned, and he felt like, if people are constantly having to leave Roseland to get their groceries, to go to a fast food chain, right? Not even a sit down restaurant, but a fast food place, then they don't really have a community because they are constantly having to leave their home. And people pick up on that, they recognize that, and that, of course, affects people as well.
When we talk about gun violence, we often, I mentioned the grim statistics I mentioned at the top of the segment here, and you lose the human tragedy in those numbers. So I want to, you do a nice job of pulling in some individual stories, individual anecdotes in your reporting. Can you tell us about, is it Trevon Bosley? A little bit about
Yeah,
him and his
so
story?
yeah, Trayvon is born and raised in Roseland. And his family came to Chicago during the Great Migration. And some of them are on the west side, but a lot of them are on the south side, where he's at in Roseland. And he experienced gun violence, from a really, really early age. So around 7 years old, his a cousin was shot and killed, and then within about half a year, his older brother was shot and killed as well. And it, of course, devastated the family. He described his brother, whose name is Terrell, as someone who just kind of knew everyone. He always knew something that was going on, and he really loved to play music. And when you have that type of loss, it really can throw people into a sort of deep depression. And he described the way that he felt, trying to process that for the rest of his childhood. He's now in his early 20s, as sort of a feeling and a time of hopelessness. And he talked with me about how his family was able to sort of claw out of that and try to move forward. And a lot of the ways that they have done that is through, trying to do anti-violence work, which is, a common story in Chicago where people have been directly affected by violence and they don't want that to happen to anyone else. So they are trying to do their best to stop it, or in Trayvon's case, to really work with other youth and help them process their trauma and what they have been going through.
And this builds on what we were talking about earlier, where people see a gap in policing, they take things into their own hands to sort of build resilience in their communities, right?
And I think that's the case with so many neighborhoods in Chicago where there's a gap in services, not just policing, but when it comes to accessible food, and childcare, is that community members, and they've done this for decades, step up and fill in those gaps themselves. So you do have community members. One of them is Diane Latiker, who's in the piece. She runs an organization called Kids Off the Block, who turned her own home into a community center to help children and teenagers in Roseland that were, dealing with difficult home situations and dealing with gun violence. So it's certainly a community and people really stepping up where there are gaps in those government resources.
Kadra, just about 30 seconds left, maybe a minute in our conversation here. This is the first piece in a series that's out today on the Trace. What can people expect in the rest of the Aftershocks series? Can you give us a little preview of what else is coming in your reporting?
Yeah, so we hope to continue telling stories like the ones that we have been able to tell with Roseland, with people sharing their stories with us. The next story that's coming out tomorrow is about the Illinois Crime Victim Compensation Program, which is a 50, almost 50-year-old program in the state, and we look at how effective it has been in helping people, get reimbursements for their injury-related expenses.
Okay, Lakhidra Chavis is a reporter for The Trace in Chicago, a nonprofit newsroom that focuses on gun violence, and the author of the new series Aftershocks. The first piece, it's called In Chicago's Roseland Neighborhood, A Mix of Grief and Perseverance. It's really beautifully presented. There are lovely, colorful photos and data presentations with the story. So I urge people to go to that. We'll have a link to it at our website, 21stshow.org. Lakhidra, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.